So I would also like to thank the organizer for inviting me to this beautiful conference. Well, I will report a recent work completed with Alessio Ricanti at the BC Center in Trento. And this work concerned the study of spin fluctuations and the role of magnetic susceptibility in a Fermi gas interacting with the repulsive forces, in particular with the positive values of the scattering length. We heard already this morning many speakers pointed out the importance of the experimental achievement and the theoretical understanding of the BC-BCS crossover is one of the main achievements of our community, because this opens new interesting concepts about the role of superconductivity along the crossover, the role of Cooper pairs, how Cooper pairs approach molecules and the BC, the Bose-Einstein condensation of molecules. The presence of resonance gives rise to this typical many-body scenario that almost everybody knows, but I would like to mention here because it's very crucial for the discussion. For a positive value of scattering length, we have the formation of molecules, and at zero temperature, we have a Bose-Einstein condensation of these molecules. On the other side, we have a negative value of scattering length, and we have Cooper pairing, and in the middle, we have this wonderful unitary regime that already many speakers have discussed today. However, on the BC side, the story can be enriched by investigating another branch, which occurs if one starts from the zero value of the scattering length and one increases adiabatically the value of the scattering length to positive values. And the question is what happens to this branch, which is a repulsive branch, and which should which can be here in this figure, can be simply shown here, can be seen here, which goes up in energy, revealing the repulsive nature of this Fermi gas. And for small value of A, of the scattering length, this branch can be described in terms of gas of hard spheres. And this was investigated many, many years ago. And this, of course, is a metastable branch, because the equilibrium branch, the ground state branch, is the molecular branch whose energy as a function of the scattering length was illustrated in the previous talk by Christoph Salomon. Well, one can now distinguish very well between the prediction of simple mean field approaches and more sophisticated Monte Carlo calculations. So we know very much about this BC-BCS crossover. We know much less about the repulsive branch, the metastable repulsive branch. The question is what happens if we increase the value of the scattering length, going beyond the validity of the simple hard sphere model? And there are different possibilities for the fate of this branch. And one possibility is that the system undergoes a liquid-solid phase transition. And this is the case, for example, of liquid helium-3. Well, this is what happens. You increase the pressure, the system becomes more and more correlated, and at some point it becomes a solid. Another possibility is that the system jump down into the in the molecular BC phase, and this is the most natural equilibrium configuration that you can reach with this system. But then there are other possibilities. The interesting possibility that was pointed out in the experiment of 1 year ago, or maybe 2 years ago, in the group of Wolfgang Ketteler, is the possibility of producing a ferromagnetic phase. And actually, this was a possibility for describing also the situation for liquid helium-3. But in liquid helium-3, solidification takes place before ferromagnetism. And these possibilities concern the transition to equilibrium configurations. But another possibility, which is probably the most natural in this moment is that the system never remains stable in this condition, and you have an intrinsic metastability that you should take into account in the theoretical description if you want to describe accurately what happens in the experiments. The existence of this repulsive branch was first investigated in the group of Christoph Salomon some years ago. Well, it was shown that actually the interaction energy, if you start from a zero value of the scattering length and you increase adiabatically, is positive. And this is opposite to what we know to be the case for the ground state branch, where the interaction is attractive, and actually what happens in this region, the gray region, region here, is one of the challenging questions that is still now not yet well understood. More recently, in the group of Wolfgang Kepler, this transition has been investigated with more with bigger accuracy, and it was suggested that the system enters a ferromagnetic phase when the scattering length becomes larger than some critical value. However, this experiment is not completely the end of the story, because it does not exploit explicitly the magnetic nature of this phase, and in particular spin domains, which should be, let's say, the proof, the smoking gun of the ferromagnetic phase, are not observed. Actually, the interpretation of this experiment has been the object of many discussions and debates, and still an open question, and on here a list of people who gave their contribution to the discussion. I don't want to enter this discussion here, and there are many other people that I didn't mention. But the main point, which is the origin of this discussion, is that exactly, it's essentially emphasizing these two words. The system is metastable, and the condition of adiabaticity, it can be very ambiguous, because you cannot be too slow, you should not be too fast in order to remain in this phase. And probably many of the interesting things happening in this phase are associated with the proper control of these two conceptual features, metastability and adiabaticity. However, if we assume equilibrium for this configuration, one can make a comparison with the prediction of many-body theories. And this it's important in order to make the discussion more quantitative and to understand better what happens in the experiments. And for example, the simplest theory that one can build for describing this ferromagnetism is the Stoner model. But now there are also more refined microscopic approaches based on Monte Carlo simulations. And I would like to discuss a little bit what are the predictions of these theories. The Stoner model is essentially based on the main field density functional, where the interaction is a contact interaction fixed by the value of the scattering length. And using this simple formula, you can calculate the equation state, the energy, as a function of the magnetization of the system. And the prediction of the Stoner model are very easy to calculate, and you see that by increasing the value of KFA, you start from a typical non-interacting configuration, and at some point the system exhibits an instability where the second derivative of the energy becomes negative. And this is the ferromagnetic transition predicted by the model. There are interesting physical quantities which reveal the onset of this instability, and in particular we like to focus on the minimum in the kinetic energy calculated at constant pressure, which is one of the most evident signatures emerging from the experiment of MIT. The instability predicted by the Stoner model occurs at this value of KFA, and is predicted to be second order by this mean field model. But the question of the nature of the phase transition is not trivial, and I believe, to my understanding, is not completely settled if one includes a more complete description beyond mean field. I said the magnetic susceptibility, which is the second derivative of the energy with respect to the magnetization, it diverges at the critical, at the transition point, and the magnetic stability is usually expressed in terms of Landau parameters. In particular, the F0A parameter is the relevant one to account for the effect of the magnetization and the effect of the interactions. The Stoner model predicts this value for the density dependence of the Landau parameter. And the question, of course, is this model valid if one goes to large values of KFA? Certainly the answer is no. This mean field approach cannot be, in any case, cannot be valid, cannot be the exact, but can still provide the first insight on the physics of the problem. Experimentally, it was shown that some features of the Stoner model are qualitatively reproduced in the experiment, and in particular the behavior of the kinetic energy when you go to low temperature. Now this laser pointer is no longer working, and I ask Bill, who has always very efficient laser pointer, if you can. This one? Okay.
Yeah,
this is strong. Bill has always the best laser pointer. You see that when the temperature is at lowest, the kinetic energy has a rather deep and pronounced minimum, and this, together with other physical quantities compared with the theory, is interpreted as the evidence for the phase transition. The value extracted from experiment, however, gives a critical parameter which is significantly larger than the prediction of the Stoner model. But now let us go to the prediction of Monte Carlo calculations. There are two independent Monte Carlo calculations of the equation of state calculated using repulsive potentials. And this is the group of Stefano Giorgini and the group of Mitrandieri and Nadine Trivedi, who gave at the end very consistent results. One must say that these calculations are not universal, in the sense that when KFA becomes large, the results depend on the details of the interaction, and the question of universality, of course, is lost. But still, within a large class of potentials, these calculations give value for KFA which are effectively too smaller than the prediction of the Stoner model, and effectively almost three smaller than the value given by experiments. So the conclusion is that theory and experiments do not agree in a very, very quantitative way. And at the beginning, the disagreement between the Stoner and the experiment was not so dramatic, and so it was thought that possibly interaction, a more refined model could fill the gap. But now we know that there is a strong disagreement, and the physics cannot be explained, at least so far, using these simulations, the physics of the experiment. Let us summarize here the behavior of the magnetic susceptibility as a function of the inverse suitability calculated at zero temperature, calculated as a function of the dimensionless parameter KFA. The Stoner model gives the linear slope here and corresponds to the first term in this expansion. Then one can calculate also the second order expansion corrections, which is the analog of the Young Lee correction, the energy, but this is the magnetic susceptibility, which requires a different calculation, the Galinsky-like expansion, and this is the red line. The Monte Carlo simulations give these points and seems to predict that a phase transition at the value that I was quoting before, even if The exact identification of a phase transition is not easy in numerical calculations, and there are still debates, and there are people like Willisberger who has arguments showing that there is never a phase transition here. For zero range interactions. But in any case, the main point is that the magnetic stability takes, in any case, a large value, and the question is to understand what happens even before the transition in order to have a comparison with experiments. So we, in our paper with Alessio, we try to raise some questions, and in particular to identify properties which can be measured in experiments, which are directly related to the magnetic properties of these gases. And here I have classified these quantities in three classes of problems, but I will discuss only the first two. So the first class of questions is related to the spin fluctuations, which are which provide information on the two-body correlations in the system. Then there is the possibility of studying the dynamic properties by studying the spin oscillation. This is very closely related to what Martin Zierlein discussed in the previous talk. Then there is a third possibility to describe, to understand the magnetic properties, is to study directly the equation of state and the dependence on magnetization on the line of what Christoph was discussing in his previous talk. I will concentrate on the first two possibilities. And I would like to say that the spin fluctuations are really a very powerful method to investigate the nature of quantum phases in general. And we could check, for example, the Fermi, the normal Fermi liquid nature of the gas by studying the Fermi gas for small value of the scattering length. Well, the validity of the Landau theory of Fermi liquid should be guaranteed, at least in principle. Then we could look at what happens for large value of scattering length, where ferromagnetic phases take place in the system. But we can also investigate other important situations. For example, the gap in Fermi superfluids at unitarity shows up certainly in the behavior of spin fluctuations. And it will be interesting to do experiments for the superfluid phase, as well as for other future magnetic phases that experimenters will be able to achieve in the presence of optical traps. A key point here that was already anticipated by some comment, maybe you said, that the fluctuation dissipation theorem says that at finite temperature, spin fluctuations are directly related to magnetic susceptibility. And so this should be the simplest way to measure the magnetic susceptibility. However, it's not so trivial for some reason that I will discuss soon. First, here I show the classical relations between the fluctuations of the spin fluctuations and the magnetic susceptibility, which account for the thermal fluctuations of the spin. And this formula is the analog of more famous formula giving the fluctuations in the density in terms of the compressibility. And N here is the number of particles of the subvolume where you study the fluctuations. So it should not be confused with the total number of particles in the cloud. And the dependence on N is a crucial quantity, as I will show soon. In fact, when you go to low temperature, thermal fluctuations are suppressed because of the thermal factor here. So, for example, if you go at zero temperature, this formula becomes useless. And quantum fluctuations become more and more important. But what's interesting is that at zero temperature, the quantum fluctuations exhibit a different N dependence, which reveal a surface-like nature of these fluctuations. I will come back to this later. And this, the role of quantum fluctuations should be taken into account if I want to study low temperature configurations and if one restricts the study of fluctuation to small number of particles. Here I give the formula for the quantum fluctuations in the general case of a system whose static structure factor has a linear behavior in terms of the wave vector or the momentum. The fluctuations here are fixed by this coefficient alpha, which gives the linear slope of the static structure factor. In our case, is the magnetic spin structure factor. The fact that the static structure factor enters the formula is not a surprise, because this is the Fourier transform of the two-body correlation function at zero temperature, and consequently, the fluctuations are directly sensitive to the long-range behavior of the two-body correlation function, and consequently to the low-Q behavior of the static structure factor. In this formula, the C is not a contact parameter. It's a cutoff, a dimensionless cutoff, fixed by the short-range behavior of S of Q. So you should know how the static structure factor behaves at large value of Q in order to calculate this cutoff. But this enters for the log. This is not crucial to calculate in a semi-quantitative way the effect of quantum fluctuations. The value for an ideal Fermi gas are given here, for example. And this formula holds, as I said, when the static structure factor behaves linearly in Q. This is the case of for a normal Fermi liquid, but not, for example, for a superfluid. If we want to study the quantum fluctuation in a Fermi superfluid, we should take into account the fact that the static structure factor goes like Q square because of the presence of the gap. This in the spin channel, and we cannot easily excite spin modes in a superfluid because of paving. And the result in a Fermi superfluid will be a weaker dependence on number of atoms, which, by the way, has never been calculated. We are working in this direction, but I will not present result here now. Let us compare, but first I would like to ask the chairman, what is the time? How many? 8 minutes, okay. I would like to compare the thermal versus the quantum fluctuations. You see the end dependence is different, and here we have temperature, here of course we have no temperature. And you can see that for an ideal Fermi gas, where we know exactly these parameters, the quantum fluctuation can become a very easily important, even for large value of n, if we work at low temperature. And so it's easy to use this formula to decide when quantum fluctuations are important. And the question is whether this transition between thermal and quantum fluctuations are experimentally accessible. And another important question that I would like to discuss briefly, what is the behavior of quantum fluctuations when we go near the ferromagnetic transition? Because the magnetic susceptibility diverges. This is by definition the transition to the ferromagnetism. But what about the quantum fluctuation? Do they diverge or not when we go close to the ferromagnetic transition? So coming to the first question here, here there is a simple calculation based on the simplest example of a non-interacting Fermi gas for 100 atoms. You see when quantum and how quantum and thermal fluctuation compete. And the red line includes only thermal fluctuations, and so they go to zero at zero temperature. The green line includes everything. So this calculation was based on the determination of the two-body correlation function for a Fermi gas at final temperature. And you see that even at a large temperature, due to the small value of n, quantum fluctuations are very important. And concerning the experiment, I would like to quote two recent experiments, one carried out at MIT for a relatively large value of n, and showing how the temperature dependence of the density fluctuation looked like. And I would like to mention also the experiment carried out in the group of Tillman and Esslinger. Well, a much smaller value of n had been investigated, and I am sure even I've never checked that this experiment revealing the quantum fluctuations of the gas of the system. What about the behavior of spin quantum fluctuations near the ferromagnetic transition? The first answer can be obtained using Landau theory of Fermi liquids. And in particular, if we neglect, for simplicity, Landau parameters with the value of L larger than or equal to 1, then we can extract the behavior of the static structure factor, of the magnetic structure factor, and we obtain this expression here. And you can see easily from this expression that near the ferromagnetic transition, quantum fluctuations diverge logarithmically, so they diverge very quickly. And this, they diverge much more quickly than in the case of the thermal fluctuation, which diverge like 1 over 1 plus F0. So when we approach the ferromagnetic transition, we are favoring the effect of thermal fluctuations, which can prevail over the quantum fluctuations. I would like to go to the last part of the presentation, discussing what happens to dynamics, in particular to the spin oscillations. The spin oscillation of Fermi gases were investigated, of quantum Fermi gases, were first measured in an experiment by Debygin a few years ago. And what we have done now, we have tried to exploit the behavior of the frequency of these oscillations for a relatively large value of KFA. It's crucial in order to have an undamped spin oscillation to work in the collisionless regime. This can be very severe if we go very close to the ferromagnetic transition, but if we do not approach the transition too much, we are not going too close to the ferromagnetic transition, one can hope to observe and to measure the frequency of this spin mode. Following experimental techniques similar to the one that Martin was explaining a couple of hours ago. The spin dipole frequency is the analog of the giant dipole resonance in nuclear physics. And this oscillation in nuclear physics, the most famous collective mode, is called the giant dipole resonance, was discovered more than 60 years ago. And it's interesting here that we are investigating these oscillations in using the Landau framework of Fermi liquid theory. Well, and in our case, the Landau parameter is negative because the system has tendency to become ferromagnetic. In a uniform system, if F0A is negative, then we have Landau damping, and there is no zero sound propagating in the uniform systems. But here we are not in the bulk. We are in the trap, and the frequency of the trap, or the frequency of the oscillation, the dipole oscillation, fixes the lowest bound for the frequency. And so an interaction which is negative will lower this frequency, but without coupling to single particle excitations. So we don't expect Landau damping for this mode, but of course we expect collisional damping if we don't work at enough low temperature. Yes. We have estimated this the frequency of the dipole oscillation using a sum rule approach based on the ratio between the energy weighted and the inverse energy weighted sum rule. These sum rules are related to the integrals of the dynamic structure factor weighted with power with suitable powers of the energy of the excitation energy. The energy weighted sum rule coincides with the Thomas Reichkuhn sum rule of atomic physics, and with essentially is the analog of the F sum rule of solid state physics. The inverse energy weighted sum rule can be investigated using a variational approach and using the local density approximation, and can be calculated in terms of the magnetic susceptibility and its density dependence. will show here the formula to obtain, and this gives a rigorous upper bound to the dipole frequency, dipole oscillator frequency, in terms of an integral containing the magnetic suitability and its density dependence, for which we took the value of the Monte Carlo simulations of Pilati et al. And here we find this prediction for the frequency of the dipole oscillations, which reveal a significant quenching effects even before reaching the ferromagnetic transition. And in this region, for example, where we have a 20% of quenching of the frequency, we can expect that the second order expansion in the equation state should be still valid, and that this should be a first important check from the experimental point of view to our understanding of the Fermi liquid nature of this system. Just to conclude, what I have shown that the spin fluctuations exhibit key features when we go near the ferromagnetic transition. Thermal fluctuations are directly related to the magnetic suitability. Quantum fluctuations, which become important for small temperature and small number of particles, are fixed by the low Q behavior of the spin structure factor. The frequency of the spin dipole oscillation is sensitive to the behavior of the magnetic suitability and exhibit a significant quenching even far from the transition, and also to provide the first important check for precision measurements in these systems. What about open questions related to these topics? We should understand in real situation what is the role of metastability on the behavior of spin fluctuations. It would be interesting to understand more the surface nature of these quantum fluctuations, because quantum fluctuations have surface type dependence on the number of particles. But what is the surface? The surface in the case of experiment is fixed by the laser beam, which provides the column density. In our calculation was the surface of the small spheres that we assumed for our calculations. And it would be interesting to see whether these quantum fluctuations are sensitive to the shape, revealing their surface nature, as I was pointed out now. The calculation of the collisional damping is crucial to see whether the dipole oscillation will be observed in experiments, because if interactions are too strong, then there will be over-damping, and the question of the connection with the spin diffusion measurement of Martin is still to be understood. And finally, spin fluctuation in other quantum phases like Fermi superfluids are currently the presence of our agenda. I would like to conclude by making an announcement, because in Trento we are starting a new experimental activity. Gabriele Ferrari from Florence will move soon to Trento, and for any information, any suggestions, any contact, you should contact Gabriele. But I would like to conclude saying that this new field here are not only of academic interest, just to attract attention. Actually, in Trento, we do real climbing. And I would like to show this picture on the top of Dolomites, taken 1 week ago with Gabriele Ferrari and Wolfgang Ketterle, who was visiting our group. Thank you for the attention.
Thank you for the nice talk and impressive outlook.
Yeah, so it is my impression that in order to observe the ferromagnetic state, if it's there, you first need the dressing into quasi-particles. You have to be in the Landau liquid regime, where you can say that the susceptibility looks like 1 over 1 plus F.
Yes.
And then you can say, oh, then the F might actually become minus 1, and then you have the So it seems like above T over TF of 0.1, it's essentially hopeless to see it, because this addressing will not be complete. You will not actually have the description of a Fermi liquid. And I also want to connect this to the experimental data, which seems to see the strong dependence of the minimum as a function of temperature.
Yes, sir.
But it looks like there is something going on as a function of temperature, which might be connected to things have to first, I don't know, dress before you can see them. T over T of 0.12. Yeah, it's tough.
It's okay. Of course, in order to observe to check the Fermi liquid nature, we should go to very low temperature. So when I have shown 0.2, 0.3, well, this was just to show how spin fluctuations look like in the ideal Fermi gas, without any reference to Fermi liquid theory. And but of course, the question what happens to this minimum when we go further lower in temperature, this is, I don't know if this was the real question, is still something that should be explored. I don't expect, however, that if you go to zero temperature, this minimum will reach the value predicted by Monte Carlo calculations.
I think my conceptual problem is that we use an argument of Landau liquid theory that the susceptibility can diverge when the Landau parameter becomes minus one, and then also try to get a critical temperature for this ferromagnetic behavior, which is a finite temperature thing where we might not actually have this Landau liquid.
I never discussed about the critical value of the temperature. Of course, this is another important issue. But concerning this value of a minus one for F0, I would like to mention again liquid helium 3. Well, if you increase the pressure, F0A becomes closer and closer to minus one, but it never reaches minus one because before reaching minus one, the system undergoes a free quantum phase transition to the magnet, to solid phase. This is not the case in our situation, but this is one scenario that is actually the only one that we know by sure, and this is the one of liquid helium 3.
Further questions?
Thank you. Should the size of the relevant subvolume be related to the domain size?
Yes, of course. Of course, if you have domains, fluctuation should be diverse, or should be very, very low, should maximum. Because if you have all atoms oriented, all spin oriented one direction in the small sample, you should observe a bigger maximum value for the fluctuations. The question: suppose you do you measure the spin fluctuations in the MIT experiment, will you observe something big or something which does not reveal any special feature? But the question that would be interesting to study this before reaching the ferromagnetic transition, well, we have some relatively reliable theory for calculating these quantities.
Okay, let's continue on this side.
So I want to follow up on the question of how big the region should be. Now, if I understood correctly, when you introduced the expression for the spin fluctuations, you said it's important that this number and this volume is not the whole sample, that this is some small subsample. And I think you also said that this was not valid if you had undergone the ferromagnetic transition. This was for something away from the ferromagnetic transition. But and just to make sure I've understood correctly, the reason why it's not the whole volume is because there aren't going to be any fluctuations in the whole volume, because the you start off with a certain number of spin up, spin down, and that's going to be preserved, at least in this assumption, if I've understood correctly. So you have to have some sub volume. So what I'm wondering is, what are the conditions on how big that volume should be, assuming we're away from the ferromagnetic transition or anything like that, just operating in the usual domain where that should be valid. What are the conditions on how small or how big it can be and still give you the right answer?
Okay, I think that I cannot answer directly to your question. This requires a more careful calculations. And so what we did We didn't, by the way, assume any ferromagnetic phase, because
right.
When we say, or even the title, nearly ferromagnetic, just to suggest that there is a tendency of the system to become ferromagnetic, to form domains, but we never address the question of how big are these domains.
Yeah,
and,
so
one should think more in terms of this size in order to apply this idea to check the situation above the critical point.
But you're not going to give me any hint as to how big it has to be.
we can discuss.
Okay.
I don't want to say too fast.
Okay, so I see questions on the other side. Can you please raise your hands again?
If I'm not mistaken, ferromagnetic transition in the ground state cannot happen in second order. But looks like the data were continuous, or it's just kind of
The numerical simulations are not able to distinguish between second and first order. There are theories beyond the main field showing that the transition is not second order, it's first order.
Yeah, first
order. But then the distance between the first order and second order is so small that numerically Nandini can confirm this. You cannot decide on the basis of this numerical calculation whether it's first order or second order.
So I had another question. So in the, or a comment rather, in the Monte Carlo calculations, you never see the kinetic energy coming down and having this minimum. It just monotonically increases with the
This is kinetic energy. For uniform system should be calculated at constant pressure.
Yes.
I don't know what you plotted or you calculated. Of course, if you take a constant volume, you're right. But you should work at constant pressure.
Okay.
So this is...
I see.
Okay, you see that this feature of the Stoner model are a physical quantity constant.
I see.
Okay, are there any further questions? If not, let's thank Sandro Stringari again. And let's thank all the speakers of this session again.